From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 19th day of November 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Boster. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, a food safety bill has been stalled in the Senate. The chair of the Federal Reserve has lashed out at the economic policies of China. And for its part, the PRC has raised the fund reserve requirements for its lending institutions. Dave Dickey will have all the details of these stories shortly. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of WillAg.org.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the December contract in the soft red winter wheat pit at 0.75 cents lower, 6.44 and a half the settlement price. The March at 684 down a half, and May wheat at 708 and a half down 0.75. In Kansas City, lead option December for the hard red at 709 and a half down 0.75. December corn today 520 and 0.75 down 21. March at 534 and 0.75 21 cents lower as well. May futures 542 down 20 and a half, and July a settlement price at $5.45 and 0.75 down 20 cents on the afternoon. December corn futures finished the day at 491, down 17.5 cents. Soy complex now. Soybean futures January contract $12.5 a penny, down 40.5 cents. March at 1209, down 40.25, and the May at 1210, down 38.5. July soybeans 1212, down 38 cents. Next year's November contract at $11.25 and 0.75, down 34 and 1/4. December bean meal at $325.80, down $9.20. December bean oil at $48.96, down $1.90, or down $1.96 on the afternoon. Mercantile exchange, live cattle futures, $101.45 in the December contract, up 65 cents. January feeders at $117.40, up $1.35. And December lean hogs at $69.12.5, finished the day 47.5 cents higher. The February contract there at $76.85, up 105. When we come back, we'll talk with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting and take a look at the Cattle on Feed report. Here's what the outside markets look like. At this hour, crude oil futures December contract, $81.60, down 25 cents for the day. The ethanol at $2.10 and 0.4 cents, down 5 1/10 cents. Natural gas at $4.16 1/10 cents, 15 4/10 cents higher. December heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.27 1/2, up 2 cents on the afternoon, rather down 2 cents on the afternoon. And the gold futures at $1,352.20 an ounce, finished 70 cents lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,190, just about 9 points higher. And the dollar at 78.5 is currently down 0.11. The CRB index at 298.89 is down 3.62 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the immediate area in Urbana-Champaign. The National Weather Service says the skies this afternoon should be sunny, a high near 53 degrees. It'll be breezy out, south-southwest winds between 14 and 20 miles an hour, with gusts as high as 30 miles an hour. Partly sunny, rather cloudy this evening. A low of 34 degrees, southwest winds at 11 miles an hour. They'll become southeast. Winds could gust as high as 16. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. A high near 55 degrees, calm winds out of the east, southeast at 4 to 7. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 44. South-southeast winds at 8 to 10. And Sunday should be partly sunny. A high near 63 degrees. It'll be breezy. South winds at 11 to 20 miles an hour, gusting to 26. Sunday night, a 30% chance of showers. Mostly cloudy, a low of 53. And Monday, a 30% chance of showers will persist. Mostly cloudy and a breezy high of 66 degrees. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel, Illinois State Climatologist, right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Maggie Robesky in Morris at 815-941-3725. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, is with us this afternoon. Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Hey, doing great, Todd. Thank you.
I'm doing very well after, a busy 3 weeks. I've been on the road a lot. Glad to be back in the saddle, but every time I come back, it seems something has happened in the marketplace. And I think the last 3 days have been pretty jerky across the board in Chicago. Tell me what's been taking place these last 3 days and why.
Well, I think the midweek support came when mostly the technicals held. I think that's probably the best thing that happened for the market midweek, Todd, was technicals held after the disappointment that no Argentine-Chinese corn deal was struck. We also had, I think, the beginnings of the market starting to feel a little bit more secure, that they had priced in a lot about the Chinese potential for price controls and rate hike, and they were starting to look more, I think, at the micro fundamentals of the wheat and the weather there and the potential export demand. I think to kind of sum up all week this week for me, I felt like Tuesday night's overnight trade and those lows of like 509 in December corn and 1175 in January beans, those are major, major support levels now, I think both chart-wise and psychologically, that if we can hold those levels going into next week's shortened trade, holiday week trade, I think that would do a lot to kind of stem the tide here, and maybe we'd even find some short covering going into the Thanksgiving holiday because we took off another 3.7% this week in wheat, 5.3% in beans, and 2.5% in corn. So we've taken a lot off the charts and off the gains here of the last month and a half.
Yeah, I think it might be important to note maybe, and I'll bet you've been looking at this, the weekly trade difference in the corn. Actually, we're down less than we were Friday to Friday anyway. You get less than we were actually today. We're off, for Friday to Friday, 13 and a quarter of a cent in the nearby December, 18 and a quarter in next year's contract, and we were down 21 cents and, 17 and a half respectively. So the corn market, while it was off, held better than maybe you might have thought if you were just looking at today's market.
I think that's exactly right. We were higher on the wheat going into the end of the Globex trade last night. I think there's two things that the corn really have gone for them. Every day I get up and I look and see what the Dalian futures closed at, and today they closed at 805. We're talking about still near a record high Chinese corn price, and as long as that stays up at that level, I think that encourages the corn to stay at a certain premium in the Chicago Board of Trade. The other thing that the corn, I think, certainly has going for it more this week than it did last week was the return of the wheat market. Even though wheat was down more than corn for the week, the wheat held up the best in the last 3 days of trade. And it's really interesting because one of the biggest things that I think hit the markets that maybe the trade didn't really appreciate yet was that Egypt came in and bought a slew of our wheat on Thursday. And Egypt, in terms of year-to-date commitments, in terms of exports, they've gone from number 7 last year to number 3 this year, and they may even be able to end up being our number 2 buyer of wheat in this marketing year. And I think, historically, whenever you get the Egyptians on your side and they're buying wheat, the world's pretty much run out, you know, because the Egyptians tend to buy ours last. And I think between that and the Southern Plains weather, the wheat market really can give some support to the corn. Now, having said that, the wheat corn spread took a hit until today, and you know, you could literally see wheat maybe jump 30 or 40 cents and corn not necessarily do much in the beginning, but I think once the wheat starts to roll, I think the corn can really catch up with it.
I suppose those are a direct result of the drought in the Black Sea area, is that right?
That's exactly right, and the global buyers that I talk to continue to tell me that Europe is extremely tight on wheat and corn, and I think that's where the Argentine-Chinese business deal that was being rumored on Sunday night's trade and throughout the course of Monday is still something to watch, because if China would come in and book 5, 6, 7, 8 million tons of Argentine corn, that essentially would knock the Argentines out of the running for Egyptian wheat, Egyptian corn needs, European corn needs, and European wheat needs. And so I think that's where the domino effect can happen, and that's where corn still has some upside potential here. I don't think that this market is all said and done with. I think the key, too, this week was if you looked at cotton, rice, bean oil, and sugar, the food and fiber commodities really took it on the chin the hardest when we talked about China having price controls and slowing their economy down, and that makes sense because they're the most elastic. So they would be the ones to first rebound if the all-clear was kind of signaled in China.
Well, I was down south. They were pretty excited about $1.50 cotton, but I haven't. What did that market do?
Well, it was down, I think, 3 or 4% again this week. And, it's like I talked to a client in Texas. We were talking about how much you could make, $700, $800, $900 an acre on irrigated cotton this year instead of wheat. And that's if you locked in the price a week and a half ago. And I think the cotton plantings are still very much up in the air. And that brings back to the issues with the Informa numbers. And anybody else that puts them out, including me, is we got to be very, very sensitive to this recent price action shifting acres back around again.
Okay, go back to one news item, and I want to talk about China and Argentina and the corn. Because I was traveling so much and I didn't quite follow everything, I saw the announcement come out from Argentina that they may have booked a deal with China. And then I saw what I thought was a confirmation in news from China that, yes, indeed, they did plan to buy corn from Argentina. But is that simply the fact that they didn't do it yet that was the problem? Is that the confirmation that hasn't come that has worried, or did the whole deal fall apart somewhere along the lines?
I think the whole deal got ahead of itself because the Argentine and Chinese agriculture ministers were getting together to specifically talk about beans and cattle, from what my knowledge was. They were going to talk about corn, but the process of getting corn approved is being talked about being 6 months, 9 months, a year, because of the sanitary GM phytosanitary issues that China's put up against Argentina. That's what they started to talk about, and I think some people jumped the gun thinking that China was so far out of corn, their supplies were so tight that they were going to just jump and buy it and skip the process of talking and then opening the dialogue up, and I think that was a real letdown, as was the issue with EPA today, that the news wires let go that the EPA may announce as early as this afternoon that they're going to hold back on testing for those 2001-2006 vehicles for E15. And so it kind of adds and lends support and credence to the idea that this, since the midterm elections, the tone and sense in Washington is not nearly as agriculture-friendly as we would want it to be, and we may have to go into the new Congress, which is supposed to be even stricter with the new, money tightness and the fiscal responsibility being the hallmark of this new Congress. I think that's where the corn market really did get hit pretty hard today on several levels. So,
did you get the cattle and feed numbers out?
Yeah, sure did. No big surprises. Placements were at 101%. That's 1% bigger than the trade was thinking. Marketing's right on the money at 99. On feed November 1, 102.8, right on the money as far as, 103, right. Average of 102.8. On feed was a little high, but, the cattle like this EPA ethanol delay. And we've got colder weather on the way, so I don't think there's anything specifically in this report that would cause any profit-taking.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Now, if you'd like to hear again from Mike, you can always do that in a couple of ways. You can dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. It's just voicemail, but Mike will be there at about 3:15 this afternoon with the closing numbers. We update that at 10:15 and 3:15 each and every business day of the year, 217-333-3434. Or you can visit willag.org, our website. We'll post not only Mike, but Commodity Week, and our guest is John Bondurant. We'll record at 4:30 this afternoon. That'll be up by about 6 o'clock this evening. You can bet we'll be talking about cotton with him. John Bondurant on Commodity Week and willag.org. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment. He'll bring us all the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, A major food safety bill in the Senate appeared to clear another procedural hurdle Thursday night, but one senator's insistence that the Senate vote on his measure to freeze earmarks shut down debate. Senator Tom Colburn, a Republican from Oklahoma, brought work on the food safety bill to a halt late Thursday evening by insisting that senators vote on an amendment to the bill that would ban all legislative earmarks through 2013, a provision that would effectively save about $16 billion a year. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid issued a statement late Thursday lashing at Colburn for allowing debate on the food safety bill to slow. Colburn's amendment stalls the final vote on the food safety bill until after Thanksgiving. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke hit back today at critics of the U.S. Central Bank's bond-buying program and issued a thinly veiled attack on China's policy of keeping its currency on a leash. Bernanke, facing a chorus of protests about the asset-buying spree from within and outside the central bank, said a more vigorous U.S. economy was essential to fuel the global recovery and dismissed charges he was debasing the dollar. Bernanke also said that inflexible currencies were preventing a needed rebalancing of global growth and could end up destabilizing the world economy. China's central bank today says it will raise banks' reserve requirements for the second time in 2 weeks, stepping up its battle to rein in prices before inflation has a chance to take off. The People's Bank of China said it would increase required reserve ratios by 50 basis points. It takes required reserves to 18.5% for big banks, a record high. The central bank said the increase was intended to strengthen liquidity management and appropriately control money and credit issuance. Plans released yesterday by the European Commission say that environmental concerns should be at the center of a 55 billion euro farm subsidy policy, kicking off what will likely be a fierce battle over how to reform the 27-nation bloc's most expensive policy. The Commission also proposed imposing an upper limit on direct payments to large producers to improve the distribution of payments between farmers. H.J. Heinz Company says growth in overseas markets, such as Latin America, more demand for its ketchup and price increases helped second quarter net income rise 9%. Heinz says net income rose to $251.4 million, or 78 cents per share. That's up from $231.4 million, or 73 cents per share in the same period last year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. By about 6 o'clock this evening, we'll replace our current Commodity Week with the next edition. It'll be recorded at 4:30 today. Our guest, John Bondurant. So John Bondurant on Commodity Week. We'll put it up on the website by about 6 o'clock this evening at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you know, 147 years ago today, on the 19th of November, President Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address. The Civil War had entered its third day, and for 3 days, more than 90,000 soldiers from the Army of the Potomac and about 75,000 troops from the Army of Northern Virginia had fought at the crossroads in Pennsylvania's fruit-growing hill country. That clash between the Union and Confederate soldiers in the market town of Gettysburg stands as the largest land battle ever fought in the Western Hemisphere. On this day in history, President Lincoln came to the site to consecrate a cemetery in their honor. The brief Gettysburg Address marked a defining moment in the Civil War. 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we're engaged in the great Civil War, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives, that that nation might live. It's altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
That's my reading of the Gettysburg Address. Abraham Lincoln delivered the famous speech 147 years ago today. On the phone line with us this afternoon, here on the Closing Market Report, to take a look at a Friday cash grain market is Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Todd, I don't know how you possibly follow the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah, well, it's not easy, so we just dive right into it.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's an important event in the history of the United States, and a few years ago I decided it was important enough to read out loud.
And it helps keep things in perspective.
Indeed it does. Speaking of perspective, what are producers thinking about all the gyrations this week?
Actually, I think they're standing aside watching and getting a severe case of whiplash as much as we're bouncing this thing around from one day to the next.
And do you believe this to be a choppy consolidation phase that will result in a move higher or a move lower?
I guess my bias is, yes, that it's a choppy consolidation phase, and we've got more risk to the upside than to the downside. But I'm not sure if we're in a historical ball game or if we're in a whole new ball game that I don't know what the rules are right now.
Well, we've been here before in that case, in 2008.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it's one of those things. In 2008, after that, we thought it was, you know, a once in 10 or 20 year type deal, and now it's like, what if we're going to see something like this with some significant regularity? And it kind of changes the rules on what you have to do for having enough working capital to support some just huge credit lines and seasonal lines.
And you have to work with your bank as the elevator, I think, fairly closely then, more closely than you have probably in the past.
Well, since 2008.
Wow.
You know, in the summer, CoBank was concerned because nobody was borrowing any money. They are not worried about that right now.
Okay. What are your bids for the day?
We are at 505 on nearby corn and 1182 on the soybeans.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes with the Ag Weather.
Peterson, since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
It's National Carbonated Beverage with Caffeine Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the first export shipment of crude oil from the U.S. to Europe left from Philadelphia. A cargo of more than 1,300 barrels of crude arrived 7 weeks later in London. The crew of the Elizabeth Watts was shanghaied because recruiting a crew transporting oil was impossible. In 1883, William Siemens died, a German-born English engineer and inventor. He was a pioneer in undersea cable and the steel industry. he developed a regenerative system using waste gases to preheat fuel gases, key in the open heath furnace used to purify steel. In 1918, Charles Richard Van Hise died, a U.S. geologist. He regarded soil conservation as crucial to the well-being of the nation. In his work, The Future of Man in America, he wrote, "We should work with the agents of the earth rather than reverse their work, as we have been doing since American settlement began." And in 1998, Ted Fujita died, a Japanese-American meteorologist. He was known as Mr. Tornado for his research into severe storms. He developed a scale for measuring tornadoes on the basis of their damage, and he was the first to verify downbursts and microbursts and their impact on airplanes. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. State climatologist Jim Angel now joins us from the Illinois State Water Survey right here on campus. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good afternoon, Don.
You know, I was in Fayetteville, Arkansas last night to address the United Soybean Board's SDS, that stands for Sudden Death Syndrome, soybean conference there. And when I left, at about 7:30, it was 34 degrees in the northwestern part of that great state. And it was just kind of cold. I thought it was a little odd for it to be that cold.
Yeah, to be that cold, that and being farther south than us and everything, you kind of expect to be a little nicer there.
I mean, it looks like, speaking of nice, we've got some pretty good weather on tap.
Yeah, we do. We have lots of sunshine over the next couple of days, highs in the upper 50s, maybe even up to 63 on Sunday. Then some rain Sunday night and Monday, and it started a general cool-down period. So we're going to be, especially after Monday, really start to cool off, get back down into temperatures more like you'd expect at the end of November.
And they are?
Yeah, if you look at starting about Tuesday, it gets down to 33 at night, and then Wednesday it's 28. And actually the high on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, is only going to be about 34 degrees. And it'll be kind of windy as well, so that'll be a good day to stay inside.
Oh, by golly, we're getting to the end of the November and turn into December. It'll be January and really cold before we know it.
That's right. Yes, the fun begins.
Well, what do climatologists know about the weather and this transition we make in the fall from fall to winter and when that comes, usually in our part of the world?
Yeah, usually. You know, I always consider Thanksgiving is kind of the benchmark for when we start to see winter-like weather in Illinois. You know, that's usually about the time we, at least northern Illinois, gets that first snowfall, and we start thinking about those really cold temperatures and pull out the winter coat and so forth. So I always think of Thanksgiving as kind of the front end there, and as we get into December, there's still some periods where it could be mild, but our chances of seeing some pretty significant storm starts to occur in December.
Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of storms, we probably could use a little rainfall in parts of the Midwest. Anybody got a chance of that over the next few days?
That's right. You know, it's been bone dry for November so far, and the next shot, at least for us here locally, is Monday and Tuesday. There's kind of models are showing a system kind of rolling through in the Tuesday-Wednesday time frame. We'll have to see how that shapes up. It's a little bit disorganized right now, and I'm not sure how much precipitation we're going to get out of it, but that's at least our next shot.
Jim, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hey, Jim Angel is with the Illinois State Water Survey. He serves as the state climatologist for the great state of Illinois. He's filling in this afternoon for Steve Hilberg, who usually joins us. They're both in that same office complex. Steve, of course, with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in if you can for Commodity Week on our Saturday morning show. You can even hear it before we air it on any radio station. You can do that at willag.org. That's willag.org. John Bondurant will be our guest. We'll post by about 6 o'clock this evening. I'm Todd Gleason.